Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260, a one chapter per week, 260 week, 5-year long study of the New Testament. Today's program, lesson number 3 of week number 38, studying Mark chapter 10. As we get started in today's study, these reminders. For all of our free materials, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. At that page, you will find links to audio and video files, print materials, ebooks, Bible reading schedules, links to all of these IGH 260 broadcasts, links to our Bible study courses, and much more. For text updates, text IGHFREE, all one word, to this number, 55222. To study the Bible online, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. To study the Bible by mail, call us toll-free at this number, 1-855-IGH-6988, to receive a free 30-lesson Bible study series, or use the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com to request that series. Remember, if you miss any of our IGH 260 broadcasts, you can always find them online at internationalgospelhour.com/IGH260. Let's return to our study of Mark chapter 10. We completed both our brief and expanded outlines of the chapter, and we have already started our verse-by-verse, thought-by-thought study of the text. Mark chapter 10, verse 1. Jesus traveled to Judea. The multitudes followed him again. Jesus taught them again. As our last broadcast ended, we referenced Keener's remark that Jesus' popularity as a traveling preacher would, quote, naturally arouse the envy of many local professional scholars and the discomfort of the authorities. End of citation. That prompted 5 observations about Jesus' traveling model of preaching, teaching, and healing. First, Jesus traveled to reach as large an audience as possible. Second, Jesus traveled because of the limited time factor. Third, Jesus traveled not just to reach a large audience, but to reach a rather diverse audience. Fourth, Jesus, because of the previous 3 elements, triggered the attention of the political and the religious leaders of the day. And fifth, very much related to the 4th element, witnesses of Jesus' preaching, teaching, and healing often told others about what they saw and what they heard. We saw that first in Matthew 4:23-25, where we learn that Jesus' fame went throughout all Syria. What Jesus taught and what Jesus did attracted the attention of the multitudes, and as they spread the word, Jesus' fame reached well beyond the area where his ministry first started. It was this fame, due to the multitude spreading what they saw and heard, that eventually reached the ears of Herod. Matthew 14:1 reads, "At that time Herod the Tetrarch heard the report about Jesus." We move next to Mark chapter 10, verses 2-9. The Pharisees' challenge: can a man divorce his wife lawfully? Jesus' response about Moses' command: God's from the beginning intent. The Pharisees came to Jesus with a question: is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife? We do not know, not from this immediate context anyway, all of the circumstances surrounding this encounter between the Pharisees and Jesus. Were they a part of the multitudes mentioned in Mark 10:1? Did they request an audience with Jesus apart from the multitudes? Or did they, from within the midst of the crowds, openly test Jesus? As the context moves forward, we do observe a shift in location when we get to Mark 10, verse 10. After the conversation, as recorded by Mark, ended at verse 9, the disciples and Jesus are presented as being in the house. The conversation in verses 10-12 take place there, in the house. But that does not tell us where the conversation took place between Jesus and the Pharisees. Matthew's parallel account tells us, first, that the great multitudes followed him, 19:2, and then second, in 19:3, that the Pharisees also came to him. Neither text, Matthew or Mark, answers all of the questions as to whether or not the Pharisees were in the crowd, or if they stepped out of the crowd, came immediately after the crowd, or some other possibility. The location, of course, does not affect the content, the message, of either the Pharisees or Jesus. It does, though, present a challenge, though a minor one, as we try to picture the scene. The issue of lawfulness that they raised proves interesting. Bauer notes two general definitions for the term. The second one appears to be the most general. It means to be within the range of possibility. It is possible. Bauer cites Acts 2:29 as an example of this use. That passage reads, "Men and brethren, let me speak freely to you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his tomb is with us to this day." Here, Peter referenced not just the possibility, but the reality of David's tomb still being present at that time. Or, as Peter stated, his tomb is with us to this day. Bauer's first definition means to be authorized for the doing of something. It is right, is authorized, is permitted, is proper. That definition appears more frequently in the New Testament. Its use, however, does not by itself tell us whether or not what was considered as authority or right or permitted or proper referred to something that God truly authorized or something that someone only thought that God authorized and was thus right. In Matthew 12, verse 2, for example, we read this, "And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, 'Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath.'" The Pharisees, from their perspective, accused Jesus' disciples of doing what is not lawful. They thought that their understanding was not only right, but that it also synced with the Mosaic Law's intent. We have already shown in our previous studies that their understanding and their defense of lawfulness in this context was more about the tradition of the elders than it was about the Mosaic Law. Jesus used the same word just 10 verses later. "Of how much more value, then, is a man than a sheep? Therefore it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." Matthew chapter 12, verse 12. Jesus stated that it was lawful to do good on the Sabbath. Jesus' meaning of lawful here was not just that he thought that it was lawful and thus in sync with the Mosaic Law, but that it was in fact lawful according to the Mosaic Law. As you read through the Gospel accounts, you will find several instances of both Jesus and his antagonists using the same word. The point, it's only by looking at the context that we will learn whether or not the right or proper thing was actually authorized by God or not. The first definition does not by itself determine that. We could grant the Pharisees the benefit of the doubt and assume that they were really wanting to know what God wanted them to know. But there's more to the context than the meaning and the use of the term lawful. Mark tells us that the Pharisees asked this question to test Jesus. The term test can mean, first, to make an effort to do something, try or attempt. We often do that in a trial and error kind of way to find out if something works or not. Similarly, it means, second, to endeavor to discover the nature or character of something by testing, try, make trial of, put to the test. These first two definitions are neither good nor bad, but the next two have motive attributed to them. The same word can also mean, third, to attempt to entrap through a process of inquiry, test, and then fourth, to entice to improper behavior, tempt. The last definition applies to Satan's attempt to get people, even Jesus, for example, Matthew 4, verse 3, to get them to violate God's will. The third one, though, applies here. We often find it used when Jesus' adversaries, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Herodians, or some combination of them, came to Jesus and put him on the spot. For example, Matthew 16, verse 1, "Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came and, testing him, asked that he would show them a sign from heaven." In Matthew's parallel account to what we are studying here in Mark 10, we read, the Pharisees also came to him, testing him, and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" That's Matthew 19:3. And our third and final example, Matthew 22, verse 18. But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites?" In that light, the use of the term lawful and the appearance of the term testing tell us that the Pharisees were not just asking questions about divorce solely to gain information. Before proceeding any further, in view of this context, Mark chapter 10, verse 2, and our comments about it to this point, it's interesting to consider this. The questions surrounding marriage, including divorce and remarriage, are certainly legitimate questions to ask. They obviously address biblical topics, but using them as a tool, as a front or a facade, to put someone on the spot, that in itself provides a unique commentary of its own. Troubled marriages and the extended families in those marriages, real, live souls created in the image of Father, Son, and Spirit, they were impacted by what God revealed about these matters. To think then that these difficult questions and equally difficult life decisions might be used as a means just to put Jesus on the spot, to test Jesus, that appears to be an indicator of just how far or just how low Jesus' accusers were willing to go. As we continue in Mark chapter 10, Jesus responded to the Pharisees' question, and Jesus did so with a question of his own. What did Moses command you? Jesus, of course, knew what the Mosaic law said. Jesus knew what all of the First Testament scriptures taught about everything, including what they taught about marriage and divorce. Jesus asked the question then to make a point about the relative weight of the text that the Pharisees hung their hat on compared with the text that he, Jesus, was about to introduce. This does not mean that Jesus was pitting one biblical text against another. It does mean, however, that Jesus was showing that one biblical passage, especially those that appear to be at odds with another, must be understood in light of other related biblical texts. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Mark chapter 10. These reminders as we close, to start our free, self-paced online Bible study, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.